Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
I'm here in New York. John Foster and Scott are on the West Coast, and we are gonna. What's the big news for this week, John? Scott, have you been following the news this week?
Well, the big news this week seems to be that Photoshop CS3 is going to be available on December the 15th.
So that's a lot earlier.
Well, this isn't going to be available. It'll be a beta version. And
so they're basically making a public beta?
It's basically a public beta, much like Lightroom or other software. And the big thing about this is that this gets around a couple of huge problems that Photoshop has running in Rosetta. And that first problem is that under Rosetta, it can only use 1 gig of RAM. That's not normally a big problem for guys that are doing web kind of things, but it is a problem for people doing print. So someone who's doing print is much better using a G5 dual with as much RAM as possible because it'll go and use all of that RAM. But with a Intel version, it doesn't. The other problem is that if you're running other apps like Illustrator and Word and Entourage and all the other things that haven't been universally binary yet, or Intellified as I call it, then the RAM footprint becomes even smaller, and you get
It's still only using a small chunk of the RAM. It's not using all the RAM.
Well, Photoshop tries to use all the RAM. It's kind of, you know,
Photoshop pretty much tries to use all the drive space, all the RAM, all the everything available on the computer. I find that it's trying to use my mouse.
Well, if you're using Photoshop, you should really just use Photoshop on that machine and try not to use other stuff. Especially if you've left it in an untuned situation.
Well, especially also if you're doing like print level stuff and higher resolution stuff. That's where this becomes super super important.
Right, like the Greg Atacapa kind of guy. You know, he's going to be unhappy with CS2 Photoshop. But this is exciting because what this does is that this shows us what this machine, the Intel version of the Macs, are really all about. We'll see some better benchmarking. We'll see the push to get to get developers to recode their plugins, which is, you know, everyone's been standing by waiting for this to happen. Now there's the incentive to get it done.
And one of the questions that's coming up right now on our forums, and just to confirm it, I think John kind of covered it, is that this is a universal code, and this actually gives, by putting it out in beta, it really does give the developers enough time to have a near public beta of their, you know, having everybody have the availability of the new application.
Right.
So,
well, and traditionally, when you get a new version of something from Adobe, and this is not a slam against Adobe, but it's just a very difficult thing that they have to do, which is they're trying to ship 5 different applications in a box at exactly the same time. And so shipping schedules doesn't allow for perfect software.
What do you mean by five applications?
Well, you've got Illustrator, you've got InDesign, you've got Go Live, but now replaced by Dreamweaver, and Adobe Bridge, and Photoshop. So you have 5 different applications that are going to go in the CS suite. And so they all have to converge at the same exact time from a development point of view.
That's a difficult thing. I mean,
it's mind-bogglingly difficult, and I'm surprised that they even made the effort to do it, because what that means is that the whole company is in lockstep trying to move forward. In the past, before they had CS, it was Photoshop would ship when it could ship, and Illustrator would ship when it would ship, and it made for better versions of the applications.
Right. Yeah, so now it's just a big... And it's something that, you know, as they try to, as they're trying to sync all these applications together to make it a better experience for the designers, that it's kind of, this is the necessary evil related to this.
Right. So I'm excited about the beta, because what this does is that we can essentially call this 1.0 of CS3. And so the people that want to be the early adopters can go and use it and report the bugs that they get. And when it actually does ship in April or May, whenever second quarter is, and that's all the way up until the end of June, then it'll be a much better application.
And I think that it also lets it definitely will be much more solid. I know that we've been doing tests where we release some of our applications, some of DB Garage's applications are released into the Pixel Core, and actually it's not just DB Garage, a handful of other applications, into the Pixel Core ahead of time, and that helped knock out a lot of bugs before it went to general release.
Right. Well,
you more people.
You can never anticipate every single way that the user is going to use stuff. And sometimes it's just the weird stuff. Sometimes someone will have a bizarre version of a JPEG that was compressed with something 5 years ago, and it just causes grief.
Well, you know, I hate to interrupt this Adobe love fest here, but I would like to point out something that there's like how many thousands of universal applications already shipped, and Adobe is like in the caboose on the train. I don't think that this necessarily should be grounds for applause that they're finally getting this thing together.
Well, we're not applauding them. I mean, for one, this was caused by engineering decisions that got made a decade ago.
Yeah.
And this has nothing to do with them going, "Oh, we're asleep at the wheel." No. This was everything from the compiler that they used that didn't get ported to Intel to Apple making decisions about which processor to use, you know, on and on.
And also, I think it's also been Adobe's further move towards the PC as far as making sure that they're really supporting the PC. I definitely feel like that Adobe has seen Apple as encroaching on their territory, and I think there's a lot of their focus. A big part of their market, half of the Photoshop market at least, is on the Mac, but they still want to make sure that they keep on pushing the PC side, because I think they're afraid of getting too far they need to be separate from Apple. So I think that that's been part of the thing, and I think that's a mistake in my opinion on their part. But I do think that most of this stuff is it's very old code. And this is not just a problem that's facing Adobe. This is a problem facing a lot of other application developers, not just with universal porting, but also with general issues related to moving forward. A lot of these apps, you start making these decisions. It's kind of like I'm in New York right now, and I always notice the difference between New York and most of the cities on the West is that one was built around, the streets are much smaller. They weren't built around modern cars. You go to somewhere in Arizona or something, and all the roads are really wide because they already knew what was coming. In the same way, applications that were written in 1989, 1990, and there's probably code that's hasn't changed very much since the mid 90s in Photoshop. Getting that all revved up is quite a process. The other thing is that Adobe is of the apps that are being used, it's a difficult app, and it's also, as far as technologically, as well as it has to be rock solid. It can't have any bugs. It can't be crashing randomly. A lot of people on the higher end or consumers are actually willing to let their applications be a little less stable.
I don't know. I mean, the people who've lost all their work because iMovie or iDVD took a hit, that's just, they're like, wow, I just spent 9 hours doing this.
And that gets annoying.
Yeah, what's with the perpetual beta thing? I mean, I heard that Chevrolet's new Corvette's coming out in beta. I mean, at what point in time do we start holding these folks accountable for something that works? Yeah, that'll be $2,000, and oh, yeah, it's in beta. Let us know how it works.
Well, here's the thing. I'd rather have a beta version of something that I know that I can have, that I can write bugs on, and that I can have positive change toward the app becoming better, than to have something that's sitting here that I've spent $900 or $30,000 on that I can't affect because we're in the new build cycle.
I mean, and this is the big problem is that typically what happens is if we waited until March, for CS3, Adobe will already be 6 months into development on CS4. when we're saying, oh, it'd be really nice to get this stuff. Now, they may take everything we said into account, but they're not going to do anything about it for another year, year and a half. Whereas right now we have a window between December 15th and probably March 1st or March 15th or whatever, where if a lot of people are saying this isn't working, we're going to see a change inside of three or four months.
Right.
I would much prefer, and I'll be honest with you, I'd much prefer Adobe to do this. I would really prefer Apple to do this, you know, where we get, there's all kinds of niggling issues that you end up with that are just, you know, goofy, you know, things that show up in a lot of applications and some of the Apple applications, that it would be really, really great if we could give, if a lot of people gave them feedback at just the right time, we were able to affect change quickly. And I just don't, even with .1 releases, a lot of times I don't see that stuff getting fixed.
Well, let me finally jump in here with Aperture. I mean, Aperture is a perfect example where Apple did just that. They didn't say they were doing it, Alex,
right.
But it's pretty obvious that they treated Aperture 1.0 as a beta, because we have had two updates to Aperture in the last 38 days alone.
Yeah, and
so Apple is being responsive, and you know there is that argument. But I just want to remind folks, you know, those of you who are younger may not remember these days, but in the old days, the companies took it upon themselves to be responsible to hire beta testers. People got paid to do this. Now, somehow, we live in a world where it's okay that we pay to be the beta testers.
Well,
I'm not quite sure that's as good
beta,
a thing.
Isn't it? Is this a free beta, John?
No, it's a beta. I mean, well, it's a quote public beta, which is...
Anybody can download it, right?
Yeah, well, you do have to have a working CS2 serial number.
Okay, great. So, what's interesting about this is that also, when you call it a beta and you start to do this, you also end up with a situation where you're able to hook people on the new version, you know, while they're, because if they start using it and testing it and playing with it and liking it, and then you say, okay, now it's going to expire if you don't pay, you know, whatever.
Alex, I have one question for you that I'm going to challenge your entire thesis on.
Okay.
You're going to fly home from New York, yes?
I am.
So would you like to fly home on the new beta version of the Boeing aircraft?
Yeah, but I can't save my position every 5 minutes either. You know, if I could save my, there was 100 feet of visibility flying into Philadelphia yesterday, and then I really did want to be able to save my position just in case it crashed. And I could go back and revert to 200 feet off the air again. So
how about this? We'll give you the new beta version of the artificial heart. Let us know how that works out for you.
Well, I just have things. I have things thump out all the time. I guess the thing is that I'm, and I have to admit that part of my understanding of this, and I think for, and you've been in this situation as well, and John, I know, has been in the situation as a developer. We develop software, at DB Garage, and the thing is that you just know that it's not all going to work all the time.
Right.
And no matter how hard you test it, I can either lengthen the development period by another 6 months or a year, and even if I hired 15 people to do beta and to test every button, until someone does something really goofy with it, I'm not going to know that hole is there. You know, because if Adobe really just did beta on the meat of their users, they would only get print users. And video guys and everything else would be kind of left out in the cold, because we represent about 5 or 10% of their market. You know, so the thing is that it is a, until someone does something goofy with it, you just don't know. And a lot of these bugs can be very obscure. It can be the collection of this, and it's really hard to come up with all of that. And to me, I just see this as an extension of crowdsourcing and a need to release things to a wider market faster, because one of the other things is you can't wait anymore for, no one wants to wait an extra year for it to be tested by a handful of people. They'd rather have 3 months of being tested by 100,000 people.
I'd rather have something that is moving forward than to have something that I know won't ever be fixed.
Right.
Yeah, so...
Okay, well, I think it makes real good sense from Adobe's point of view. Don't get me wrong. I think, as a business person, I sure get that. I completely understand that. But, well, let's see. Is there anything else going on other than the potential beta release of CS3?
Well, the other thing, just one thing that's on the forums right now, people listening, is Adobe becoming a content creation monopoly with Photoshop. And I can't see the rest of this. Hold on. Let me roll over here. I can't quite see the rest of that chat message. But I think that this has always been one of the issues with Photoshop is that it has almost no competition. So Adobe kind of, plods along with it. There's a lot of us that would love to see extra features and things added. And I think they move slowly, A, because they have a lot of people. This is the same problem that I think Microsoft has with Vista. You have a lot of people who are embedded in it being a certain way, and if you start changing it too dramatically, they'll be upset. But it also is just that there's no one really clipping at the heels of Photoshop or anywhere really close. I mean, people can talk about it, and it's great marketing to say that there's a Photoshop killer, but you know, no one's even in the ballpark at the moment. And so there's a monopoly in that sort of way. I think that the most exciting thing, if we had real competition, would be to see price changes and drops and everything else. I find that Photoshop Elements is a little too crippled, you know, for me to use, you know, for me to want to use. And I know it's not designed for me, but I think that there's lots of simple things the average user could do, and or even just releasing, I think John's brought this up before, releasing Photoshop 6, you know, as something that's, or something older.
Right.
Now, you know, years ago I was at a meeting where some Adobe people, these are all Adobe people who, by the way, don't exist anymore because they got fired when the Macromedia thing happened, but they were all talking about this rollout of what they were calling component Photoshop, and we started to see a little bit of that in Lightroom because Photoshop's gotten so big. I mean, Alex, you live in a Photoshop world that most photographers don't even know exist, and likewise, designers live in a Photoshop world that most video people don't know exist. So it's just what they were talking about was releasing components of it, almost like breaking up the monopoly, if you will. And if you look at that point, then there is some competition. Obviously, Aperture has something to say about how the photography side of this thing all shakes out. And I don't think that, you know, Aperture was ever designed to be a Photoshop killer, even though we've all used that phrase at one point in time looking at the press releases early on a year ago. But I do think Aperture provides an interesting alternative to the photographers who use Photoshop if they don't need to do masking and layers. Everything else you can do in Aperture.
Yeah, and that's the, for me, I don't need anything added to Photoshop. I mean, there are a handful of things that I'm really glad that CS2 has, but I have to admit that I'm 90 to 95% of the stuff I use is still stuff that was in Photoshop, you know, five or six. You know, I mean, my patterns haven't changed dramatically. You know, since then. So, and I always think that if we just give people those basic stuff and let them get good at it, then they might be more interested in some
of those
other pieces.
It's all good compared to version 09. Remember the prompt?
Right. There's that. So now, moving on, according to Forrester, there's been this article that came out by Forrester Research that says that the iTunes sales are in a free fall.
Yeah.
Well, how would they know that without having specific statistics from the iTunes store?
Well, that's what Apple's saying. They actually, it caused enough of a firestorm for Apple to actually say something in public, which is, you know.
And they almost never, ever, times a billion, ever do that.
Right. And it just seemed to be. Now, what do you guys think? What do you think of the claim that Forrester made and of Apple's reaction?
John, you go first.
Well, there's a whole bunch of iPods that are in gift wrap right now that aren't being hooked up to anything, so there's no iTunes to put on them. So we'll see a surge after December the 25th.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because everyone's waiting for their new...
Well, no, they're not waiting. It's just that they're in gift wrap. They're under the tree. And so with everyone waiting, you know, there's gift cards that are being bought, there's iPods that are being bought, and money right now is traditionally being diverted toward other things. And I think that if we were to go and look at the numbers, we would see that people are out shopping. People are out buying and spending their money not on tunes but on iPods themselves.
Well, we know Forrester just, you know, they're so well known for getting it right. Let's roll back to 1993 when they said, oh, the Internet, it'll never go anywhere. It's a complete fad. It's going to last a week. We're done. And then a couple years ago, podcasting's peaked already. And, I think their motto is, we're not happy till you're not happy here at Forrester. How would they know? Bottom line is this. I think a lot of this comes from the news stories, Alex. I have been going nuts in the last 2 weeks. The echo chamber out in the Internet sometimes drives me nuts. You see a press release. You look at the press release, and it reports to, you know, say some kind of statistic from a report. I'm the kind of guy that actually reads the report. And I look at the report, and I see 20 news stories, 10 of which will have a headline that says, iTunes sales booming, 10 of which will say, iTunes in the toilet, all looking at the same report. And it really just boils down to the numbers. Here's the number that no one's talking about, because I read the report. They're saying that there's an average sale of 22 songs per iPod. I don't know how they get that number, but let's say it's true. Well, in a situation where you have a $22 add-on sale to an electronic component that represents roughly 10% of its price, I can tell you right now, the entire marketplace would jump off a Niagara Falls to get that number.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that with any of this, with whether we're looking at research, and we've said this before, I think we've talked about this on TWIM a little bit, but with any kind of research, you know, any of these researchers aren't in the, I mean, their job is to analyze the business and everything else, but they oftentimes know just the hair of what they're actually doing here. I mean, they're mostly talking to spin doctors, and that's their job. And the thing is that when you see press, for instance, when you see an article about things that you don't know anything about, you know it's the truth. When you see an article about things you know nothing about, if I see an article about, you know, Kazakhstan, you know, it might as well be true because I don't know anything about Kazakhstan, you know, but, you know, I mean, you know, Borat's version may be just as true as any other one. I don't know what that looks like. And so I think, oh, that's a great article on whatever that is. Whereas as soon as they talk about anything that I know about, and it doesn't matter whether I'm a lawyer or a farmer or a computer graphics artist, I get very clear that they have no idea what they're talking about. They have no idea what, you know, what really is going on there. But that's the whole mystery of news that keeps people excited, is they think that they're talking about lots of things that the average person doesn't know about, and so we think it's the truth. You know, it's all, you know, it's all spin. And so the
I got to look at their research methodology. Here's what they do. They found a guy named Dave. His sister knew a guy whose cousin had walked by a store where they sell iPods, and that's where they got their number.
And he walked by and didn't buy one.
No.
So the other, you know, one of the things that I do think is interesting about the whole iTunes thing and whether the Zune will make any difference, you know, because I know we've talked, and I know how much Scott, I know how much you love the Zune, but we're gonna step back a second, and we're gonna try to look at it objectively.
I'm objective. It sucks.
Well, I was actually thinking of testing a Zune. I'm thinking of actually going out and getting a Zune and testing it. You know, Leo's had one, but I haven't. And I'll tell you the thing that I'm most interested in is the subscription service. It may not be a Zune, it may be something else, but I'm actually really realizing that a subscription service may be something that may, in the long term, possibly catch on. I'd really like to see a hybrid between them, you know, between what Apple does, where I can buy the songs and a subscription. There's a lot of times where I just want to download a whole bunch of stuff that I just want to listen to for a trip, but I don't want to pay $800 for whatever I was going to download. I'd rather just pay $15 a month and just be able to do that for trips and not have to buy every song that I have a whim to listen to, you know, and that's the thing I'm most interested in with any of the other players that's going on here. So it's a... So anyway, but we'll see. Now, have you guys seen the new Parallels release?
It's really cool.
Oh, my goodness. Scott.
Scott will never see the new Parallels release. Scott,
this one's for you, Scott. It's for you, Scott.
I don't, listen. There are a list of 1.29 million things that will happen before I ever put Windows on my Mac. It's not going to happen, guys. Forget about it.
John, what's new in the new Parallels release?
Well, the big thing in the new Parallels release is a thing called coercion. Coercion?
Coercion?
I don't know. It starts
is that a word?
It starts with a C.
And what is
coherence?
Coherence. Coherence. Like I said, it starts with a C and an O. But what it does is it lets you call out a window so that the window that would normally be stuck in a box in a window can now live side by side with whatever other Mac apps that you have.
Now you need to use Bootcamp on this to make this work, right?
No, you don't have to use Bootcamp, but it will use the Bootcamp partition, which is really cool because that means that if I want specific speed with a video driver, for example, if I wanted games or if I wanted my environment to be all Windows all the time, I would boot into Bootcamp. But if I just need that one app that I'm using once in a while, this is a great way to have that work.
Well, and I think that's been the big thing is that, I mean, what I couldn't believe is that when I saw the video of the coherence of just being able to you're opening applications and it's almost as if the application is just running as a Mac application with slightly different interface.
It's really amazing.
Yeah, and I have to admit, the Parallels thing, you know, I have Bootcamp because I've been using a lot, you know, mostly Softimage's XSI and a handful of other high-end 3D apps like Endorphin, and they need their own environment. But I was at a, I don't know if I should talk about where I was, but I was at a broadcast facility yesterday, and the art director had, you know, just bought a new Mac Pro and had OS X, had two monitors, and had OS X on one monitor, and had Parallels running full screen on the second monitor, and it was amazing. I mean, he was sitting there being able, and he almost, I mean, the next piece would be able to drag between the two, and you'd have both of this, you know, all kind of solved. And I think that this is important for Apple only because I think that what this really provides us is I think that what this provides us with is for all of us that have that one or two apps, other than Scott, that have the one or two apps that we need to use on a PC. My, you know, for instance, our CFO needs to use QuickBooks on the PC because QuickBooks on the Mac sucks. So so QuickBooks on the PC, she has to run a separate PC right now, and we're about to get her a MacBook Pro or a Mac Pro to, or MacBook or whatever that Mac thing is. That's a little thing that you carry around. And just so that she can run those financial apps that she's embedded in, and then just have the rest of her life on a Mac, you know. And I think that that's why we're seeing this huge upsurge in percentages of Apple sales. You know, we're now seeing them jump to 5.9. They could be as high as 6.5 or 7 by the end of next year. By, you know, Apple could be 10% by, you know, 2010 at least.
Well, here's a good example of how you would use that. One thing you can do is you can share a folder so that it has a common folder between your Parallels and your Mac. And so you store your data in that folder. Then if your computer gets viroed, then all you have to do is blow away the partition that did that, the virtual space, and then load the one from your backup, and you're good to go.
Right. I think you got some on your shirt there, John.
You did not. Look, this as far as I'm concerned, this is the new classic. This is bigger than probably the classic or any of this stuff. I mean, really what this does is it levels the playing field so that there's no reason that you can give an excuse to say, well, I can't run a Mac because.
Well, I think it's actually further than that. I think you really have to come up with a strong reason to buy a PC a PC at this point, like a pure PC. Simply because, you know, when you're buying a Mac now, you're buying two computers. You're able to run all your PC stuff, and you're able to run all your Mac stuff all at the same time. And that's the thing that I'm pretty excited about. Now, there's a question on the forums as to whether there's a free update. Whether this is a free update, John, do you know the answer to that?
I think it's going to be a free update, but I, you know, that's the crystal ball in me that's saying that.
Right. But it's
and, you know, here's the thing. Even if it was $30, it would be totally worth it. If for no other reason than the installation.
Right.
When you the way that they'd make the installation work now, it's pretty cool. You instead of having to go through the entire Windows decompression where it takes, I don't know, between 30 and 40 minutes, and as long as an hour to do, it's the Parallels thing knows what needs to go where, and it copies it right to it, and you don't see any of the normal Windows installation.
Right,
it's very fast.
Yeah, no, it's I think it's pretty revolutionary. I'm kind of surprised that Apple. We have one comment. Hopefully, one day OS X will work on PCs through Parallels. Oh yeah, no, that won't happen. I don't think that Apple, you know, this comes down to a whole issue, but I don't think Apple's ever going to make it really.
Well, there's a bunch of economic reasons that won't happen, but, you know, look at it this way. If the adoption rate of Windows Vista doesn't happen quickly, then there's a reason to have Mac OS on those machines instead.
Right. Yeah. So now, what else happened this week? I was traveling all this week, so I've been catching up here. Was there any other big news this week that people weren't as active on the Mac Break Ideas tags this week in Delicious?
Well, I'm trying to avoid the obvious thing to talk about, so I'll move on to the next thing. the Apple Aperture update was news. That was kind of a big deal.
What was changed?
It was just a bug fix, but it did fix a lot of, you know, nuisance bugs that were uncovered. 1.5 was the really big, you know, recent update, and then, of course, that led to 1.51 and 1.52. And there's some bug fixes, and they rethought a couple of things after they got some complaints from the user base. One of the big deals for a lot of people was the way the watermarks were applied to JPEGs and stuff. Originally, you would create a watermark, and then it would be whatever size you made it and put it on your picture. In the 1.5 update, they made it so that that watermark scaled, so you couldn't control the size of the watermark. They went back on that and fixed it. Just some, you know, little buggy UI things that needed to be. It wasn't anything major, but every time they do this, it shows that they are extraordinarily committed to making this thing work, which is really quite you know, interesting to note, given the fact that according to the rumor sites, Aperture's dead.
Right.
The team's been fired. Joe Shore doesn't have a job. People are killing their cats and dogs. I mean, whatever. Anyway, I think that's news, because I'll tell you what, the Aperture community is really picking up on the web. There's a lot more traffic about it. I created the first Aperture blog a year ago this Saturday. Mm-hmm. And when I did that, I was lonely.
Right.
There weren't a lot of Aperture users. But now, I mean, it's a big deal. So
I use it every day. You know, I don't actually have a single photo in iPhoto at this point. You know, I don't really go back to that anymore. I'm just so used to what I get in Aperture that it's not really a consideration for me anymore. Now, for an average user just taking photos, I don't know if that makes sense, but. I would consider myself using Aperture almost like, I mean, I'm not a professional photographer, and I think that I probably am using it like iPhoto Plus.
Yeah. Well, you know, I use it every day too, Alex, and that's something. I mean, people, you know, I've gotten a couple emails since I started talking about Aperture on the various podcasts, and like, oh, you're just an Aperture fanboy. Are you working for Apple? And yada yada yada. And well, the answer is no, I'm not working for Apple. And I just want to remind people, I have a best-selling Photoshop book out there. So, I mean, I'm making a statement against my own interests when I mention the fact that I like Aperture.
Well, and just like you said earlier, I don't think that Aperture and I think they both kind of live in their own world. I don't ever consider I'm going to do something in Aperture that I wouldn't do in Photoshop. I mean that I would do in Photoshop. I kind of go back and forth pretty seamlessly. Most of what I'm doing in Photoshop is editing anyway. I know for people who are only doing color correction, Aperture may be more what they need, you know, in those areas, or as much of what they need. But you know, I don't.
But,
I see that
yeah,
not
I just find that I don't need Photoshop anymore, because unless I have to do masking, which I rarely do because I try to get the picture right in the camera in the first place, then you know, most of what I was using Photoshop for was pretty basic stuff: cropping, rotating, minor color correction, perhaps changing something to black and white, doing a little sharpening, resizing, etc. I do all that in Aperture now, and I do it in about a tenth the time it used to take me in Photoshop. So for me, you know, I'm always excited about Photoshop every year that it comes out, and then this year I realized not so much.
Right. Well, look at, you know, when you look at the professional photographers, I mean, these are guys that have spent a lifetime learning their craft. And so to throw Photoshop into their lap and say, here, learn this, it's a daunting tool. And to find the 12 things that a photographer is going to need to do and wrap that up into a professional package, that just shows a lot of foresight to make that
yeah,
work.
Yeah, and John, that was brilliantly said, because that's exactly what Aperture is intended to do. Aperture is, I know a lot of digital photographers, and there's two camps. There's the Photoshop people, and these are the people who for whom photography is more about Photoshop than the camera. And then there's the Aperture people, and those tend to be people who, you know, come from, hey, I get it right in the camera, and I just need something to manage all this stuff, and Aperture does that. And I think it's also interesting to note that iView Multimedia, which used to dominate the space in terms of being the choice for people who wanted to collect their media and organize it, is going to become part of the new Microsoft photo design suite, which is kind of like weird.
Yeah. Well, a couple questions from the forums. One is, does anyone think that Parallels would get picked up by Apple, given how popular it's getting?
I would say no, right off the top. I mean, there's so many different competing virtualizations. There's the open source Wine project. There's the stuff that's happening what's the name of that? It's the other one. There's four different projects that are out that are either in beta or they're selling, and I don't see it happening.
Right. Yeah. No. I think that I don't think Apple's ever going to give a nod to Windows.
Well,
they're going to make it available, and there's no reason for them to.
Here's the biggest reason to do that. Here's the exact biggest reason. and that is that if they have a virtualization machine, then they're responsible for all the little nitpick bugs that happen. So if somebody's Windows thing doesn't work, then it's to the Apple support guy to support them. And by saying it's a third party, I mean, even if Apple threw them $1 million to say, here, we want to keep you guys going, that's better. They're better off doing that, because then they don't have the support nightmare, and then the air quote genius can be off the hook for fixing that computer.
One of the questions from the TalkShoe forums wasn't boot camp a nod to Windows, and I don't think it. Well, one of the things that Apple very carefully said is they're not supporting it. They did boot camp as a it's a beta again, just
right.
Not favorite,
and it, but, and it also runs more than just Windows. I mean, it only runs in the one of the incantations. It only runs Windows, but there's other stuff that it can run in boot camp.
Right. So there's a lot of pressure building up on the TalkShoe forums for Scott to give us an update on the. On the iPhone,
I would be happy to do that.
For those of you listening, we were looking at it, and we decided that we aren't going to talk about it. But there's been so much pressure here. We have a go, Scott, go right now on the forum. So Scott, what did you do this week?
I just want to make it perfectly clear that this was not in any way, shape, or form my idea.
It wasn't.
I was just happy to cruise along and not mention the elephant in the room, but since everybody clearly knows what's really important in the Mac universe, I'll discuss it, and here's what we know. Now we have not little stingy, weird rumor sites talking about it, but we've got Morgan Stanley, we've got Business Week, we've got big players talking about what's going on. It appears that this is the fourth or fifth time we heard rumors this week that Apple has bought capacity from Singular, and now we're hearing that they may be even selling airtime packages in Apple stores. Clearly, we're going to have an iPhone. Nobody disputes that anymore. Anybody that does, well, they're just wasting their time. It's a question of when. Now, one of the unpleasant rumors that was out on the rumor sites that I hope is wrong is that Steve Jobs threw a meeting with the iPhone developers, saying that it was the most, I think they said, screwed up development project they've ever had, fired a bunch of people. Who knows if this is true, but it could delay the actual release of the phone. But we're seeing some big-time Wall Street analysts talk about second quarter, and I never really thought we'd see it at Macworld. I'm still holding out for hope, though, that we see a picture of it, like they did with ITV.
Are you still planning to buy those for all of us, Scott?
Who is this?
This is your friend Merlin.
Hey, buddy. my plan is this: if they have them available at Macworld, I will put one in your pocket.
Really?
I will put one in your pocket.
Then when you're not looking, I'll take it back.
Which is why the price went up.
Yeah, I did notice. I did notice that. I got some hate mail from people saying, "Oh yeah, you had to talk about being willing to pay $800 now. We're looking at $699 for the top end. What's going on?"
You probably heard that you've been throwing around this thing about buying everybody an iPhone, and that's probably just that thing to set the price
to
the roof.
And
nothing would make me happier than as we sit in the Apple Store, Merlin, on the 9th at 6 p.m. to do Mac Break Live from Macworld. Nothing would make me happier than to have a slew, a veritable cornucopia of cell phones in front of me to just start handing out to all of us on the panel and say, guys, call me.
What a great day that will be. And then we won't have to talk about it anymore, and we'll have an iPhone, and it'll be the best of all worlds.
Merlin, I didn't bring this up.
I'm in Toronto doing a call for help with Leo, and I thought, I'll just stick my head in, and I very innocently just asked if it had been mentioned, and then it turns out that that's all it took, and I blame myself.
Well, it, don't you agree, though, that the level of quality in the iPhone rumors has gone up?
Oh, absolutely. The quality of rumors at this point is extraordinary. We have not seen quality in a rumor like this in, gosh, weeks.
Yeah, not since the asteroid leak.
Well, so my predictions are this. We will absolutely, positively, 1,000,000,000% sure see an iPhone in 2007. We just don't know when. But if it's at Macworld, I stand by my prediction and my promise. Everybody on the Mac Break Weekly panel will own one, courtesy of me.
We should have some kind of a sweepstakes where you can earn more and we give one to the kids, too.
Well, in case Apple's listening, if you all can't get this ready for Macworld, I wouldn't mind if you brought me the prototype to display to everybody.
Actually, you can win one. All you can do is win the caption contest on fakesteve.blogspot.com. blogspot.com. And you'll now, get a and you'll get a prototype iPhone.
Yeah, a real one though? I need a working one.
It is the funniest thing I've ever read. It's called Fake Steve, FAKE Steve.blogspot.com, and it's basically as if Steve Jobs was writing his day to day.
Now, the big question on the forums here is, will it come in brown?
It's going to come in clear.
Will
it's
it
made
work?
Out of fake, it's made out of
it's
real fake
cubic
diamond.
Zirconia. It's going to be a cubic zirconia.
I don't want anything that I carry around in my pocket to squirt. Thank you.
I just want to mention that they got the color wrong. It's not brown. It's turkey vomit brown. Let's get it correct.
Turkey vomit brown.
Oh, Scott, always making friends everywhere you go.
I've never heard of
that. By the way, my other phone's ringing, and I guess that means we just lost the Microsoft sponsorship.
So any other big news for this week? Does anyone listening have any news that we didn't cover? Merlin, did you have any news that you saw go by?
Oh my gosh, I'm trying to think what has been big this week. I've been kind of all over the map this week. I don't have any big news. I read Daring Fireball and the Macalope, and that's kind of where that's where I learn everything I know that I talk about on here pretty much. What was your big story?
What's with the lewd and lascivious photo of you looking at Amber's legs?
Oh, that was a staged photo that Leo insisted on. Amber just got her photo on the wall at City TV, and so Leo wanted to immortalize that.
Are you up there all week, Merlin, or are you just there for today?
I've been here since Tuesday, and then this is the end of it today. But we shot some good segments. We did Alex, you'd like this. We talked about some of your smart playlist stuff, and I don't know if we've got any closer to your mecca of smart playlists. But
I want to say once again, I need to sit down and actually. Here's the problem is I need to build a smart playlist, but I don't have enough songs on my laptop to actually do it. I need to go sit down and buy a bunch of songs. I don't actually carry songs on my laptop because I don't have enough.
You should have somebody squirt you a few.
Yeah.
Alex is like me to squirt you some songs.
Yeah, can you squirt me some scones? That would sound sick.
Hey, I just bought Susie Cream Cheese on iTunes.
Really?
Yep, Frank Zappa.
Okay, did you guys already cover the iTunes sales stuff?
Yeah.
Yes,
have
we did.
Talked about that? And what was your verdict in that?
We all think it's crap.
Yeah. It sounds like a little bit like the guy.
Sounds like a person who made a very low sample and made a very large decision from a very low sample and was probably very incorrect.
We decided it's the same person, Merlin, that predicted the internet was not going to take off.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going anywhere. You know, the thing is, it's hard to use. You know, it's hard to use. You got to be at your modem. I really don't think it's going to go anywhere.
So do we have any? Okay, who has some picks for this week? Favorite applications, hardware or software, for the Mac? Scott, do you have one for us?
I don't necessarily have one that's a favorite for the Mac, but I have to say that, you know, back in the day when we used to use Skype to do this show, and when I completely reconfigured my studio so that we could use Skype to do this show, I invested in a Rode Podcaster microphone, which of course.
What do you think of that, Mike?
I'm going to mention that, but I just want to point out the fact that I'm not the least bit bitter that we're doing this show over TalkShoe, which does not involve Skype, which means I invested all this money for nothing. But
That's a nice mic. You talked me into one of those, too. It's a swell mic.
It is a very nice microphone. It emulates, Alex, you'll appreciate this, the old EVRE20 that sits in almost every radio station in America.
Right.
And it's heavy. It weighs like, I don't know, weighs like 3 or 4 pounds. It's heavy. It's got a really good sound. It's like all USB mics. It, you know, it could use a little more gain. You do need to work it close. But it definitely sounds better than the Snowball, has much better off-axis noise rejection than the Snowball, but it also costs more than the Snowball. And it's not so much better than the Snowball that, you know, you couldn't get by if you had the Snowball. But the bigger news is there's really fancy, like even Neumann is going to be making a USB mic pretty soon. But for right now, my pick would be if you're a serious podcaster, you don't want to learn how to deal with mixers, you don't want to buy a digital interface, but you do want to get a really good quality voice thing happening with GarageBand or something, spend $200 on a Rode Podcaster. So that's my pick.
Great. And John?
SketchFighter 4000 from Ambrella Software. I mentioned this last week as a kind of a, hey, it just got released, and then I got addicted to it. It's really,
oh, really?
Yeah, it's really fun.
So, now can you give us a little bit of a little bit of overview again on what it actually is?
Okay, so what happens is that basically you are in study hall. You're bored. You've got lined paper, and you're sitting there doodling, and it's as if the person who made the doodles, their doodles come to life.
Right.
And
wow.
So it's basically a cross between Asteroids and Star Thief and a bunch of other games where you got to go collect stuff and you got to fight your way through to get a mission solved. It's pretty fun. And the thing that I like about it is that it's a lot like the controls are something that I already know from those old games. So instead of having to do combo and learning all these chords and mashing my fingers up on a console game, which it can be worth it, this is a game that's has a low time commitment and it's really easy and fun to get into.
Now we have a question for you, Merlin, on the forum. Are you still using Pazuz, or was that just something that you used as a selection?
I think Pazuz is destined to become my iPhone. I still use Pazuz. I use it on the flight here. It's the part that people don't get is the haters is that it's easy to very quickly get into a nap. Everybody knows how to fall asleep. I'm getting defensive about this, but the beautiful part about Pazuz is that you can do it very quickly with confidence. I still like it. I use it. Have you been Pazuzing, Alex?
I haven't pazizzled yet, the thing is I was thinking about it yesterday afternoon, and I just couldn't remember the website for it because I had flown in the morning from Pittsburgh to Philadelphia, and then had meetings there, and then took a train from Philadelphia to New York to have meetings here yesterday, and I got here and I had about a half an hour before the meeting, and I really was like, man, what I really need is a pazizz.
Yeah.
And
they got a free demo. You can just grab it and give it a shot.
I should have downloaded it.
Yeah.
Merlin, you said anybody can fall asleep, so you don't use Pazuz to fall asleep. Is that correct?
You know what? I'm not gonna fall into this trap. I'm not. I can see that there. It looks like it's just branches in my path, but I know as soon as I step on it, I'm going to go into a big hole.
I'm wondering if the easy part is falling asleep, that would mean that the hard part is waking up, and I can certainly see where like a friggin' alarm wouldn't do the trick for you, right?
Sorry, bad Canadian connection. Having trouble hearing you. Alex, do you want my pick of the week?
What's your pick of the week?
I have a pick of the week. I think I've mentioned this before. Actually, this is getting so fractal and self-referential, but I'm actually going to talk about this in a little bit on Leo's show. But I love this application called TubeSock. And if you're like me and you're squandering away huge amounts of your time playing with YouTube, TubeSock is an application that you basically point at any URL on YouTube, and it sucks that movie down, takes it from an FLV, turns it into an iPod video, and squirts it onto your iTunes for you so that it's readily available for your iPod. Now, this is like the best thing in the world, and we've talked about it before.
But it's the same, pretty much the same thing.
I've had better luck with TubeSock, but it's the same idea. But here's where this gets better, is that the only failing of the app is that you could only put in one URL at a time, and it would kind of be a pain in the butt. And now there's a program out there that is called TubeSock Loader that does nothing except let you drop in a bajillion URLs. So you find all those Steely Dan videos you've been looking for years and drop them into TubeSock Loader, and it will squirt all of those into TubeSock for you and then squirt all of it into iTunes for you consequently. It's great, and it's very fun. And I just used it for a whole bunch of videos, and it works great. It's a crazy URL. It's a schoensign.at, but you could probably just go to Mac Update and search for TubeSock Loader.
Now, our schedule for the show, just in case we run out of time here, the schedule for the show is supposed to end in 20 seconds. So if it ends, I want to thank everyone, Merlin and John and Scott, for signing in. If it doesn't end, I'll go ahead and start it. But if I get cut off, this is our first test of Talk Show. We're hoping to do this once a month. Let us know online whether this is something you'd like to see regularly. I'm thinking of doing this once a month where we can have people call in. And then we have a lot of people. It's been really great to see people popping stuff up here on the forum while we're talking. And hopefully we can get some people, get more people online. I think this is a great little test for MacBreak. I think mine, and I don't think I've talked about this too much before, and this is on a Mac or a PC, but it's the Mac version is just fantastic, which is Google Earth. Have you guys played with Google Earth?
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. So fun.
This is a distinction from maps.google.com. This is that on steroids. I mean, you can literally lose an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, just playing, jumping around, looking at maps, zooming in. On top of what you see with maps.google.com, you can see there you can actually load 3D buildings. You can actually put your own buildings in that work in your own Google Earth and then submit them so that people can download them if they want to add to Google Earth. There's just an enormous amount of development going on right now, and I think that it's just a killer app in the making. It used to be called Keyhole a long time ago, and that's when I got into it. And you're even seeing people use it on the news when you see Google Earth, you know, because you can get, there's like the little base version that you can get for free, and then you can buy a pro version, which I think is like $250 or something, that lets you animate movies going over the terrain and, you know, everything else. And I think that you can also see where all the closest restaurants are. I personally often am finding the nearest Starbucks on Google Earth. Like, where is that?
I used it to plan my first trip to Toronto. Because you can go in, and what's awesome is you go in and create a folder called Trip to Toronto and add place marks and all those for all the places you need to go, and then say, like, show me the ATMs that are nearby, and it just zooms into that area, and you can just print that out and take it with you.
Yeah, it's a really great app, in my opinion. So
Is this a good time for you to cross-promote the latest Mac Break, which is actually one of my favorites?
Here's the funny thing is, I just want to say for the record, I forgot that we were actually talking about Google Earth on Mac Break, the show this week.
Video show.
We shoot
that's
this so much earlier.
You should tell the kids about that. That's a great segment.
Yeah, this is there is a show right now with Leo and Alex Oliver from Mac. Alex Oliver from, it's called School, and they're doing training for Google Earth and SketchUp, and this is how to build models in SketchUp and interact between that and Google Earth. And there's SketchUp, Google SketchUp allows you to actually build models and insert them directly into Google Earth, and that's also free. Google SketchUp is a free application, and so this is kind of an introduction to that. And Alex Oliver kind of popping through it, and Alex is amazing, and the application is amazing, and it's a really good episode. After we took a little hiatus to show people how we were doing it, this is our first one back in. I think it was a really good example of how that stuff works.
He shows how you can, like, make your own house, the shape of your house, and then, like, skin it with a photograph to actually make it look like your house, and then share that with people on Google Earth. It's totally badass.
So that's out this week on Mac Break, the video. And one thing people may notice about Mac Break, the video, by the way, is that the rate of shows coming out is much faster than it has been in the past. So we were hovering along at about one show per week, and I think we're going to now start moving to 2 to 3 shows a week towards our end goal of every day. I think we may be in sometime in the spring, so that's kind of the direction we're going. But so definitely check that out if you haven't seen some of the Mac Breaks for a while. This one is a great one to jump back into, and I think we have some new ones coming from Merlin Mann soon. So and people have been we've got some posts about the new Twit Open, you know, the Twit Sounder at the beginning of the show, and that's all from Carl Hoffenfrost, who is in here in New York. I was actually meeting with him while I was up here, and he's the art director for WABC, and he's the one that put that together. So
he did a great job on that, Alex.
Yeah, it's really nice.
It just makes the show feel bigger. I don't know what it was, but I just thought it just, the show just feels like, I was like, wow, we're watching, you know, it really feels like a network now, you know, so it was, so we really enjoyed
it. Now
we
just need that guy saying, the agony of defeat.
So we're, so I think I want to thank everyone who called in and logged in to TalkShoe. I think this is a really good experiment. I really enjoy it. It's fun. I think that hopefully we'll be able to do a lot more of these. And once we get a little bit better at it, Leo's already an old master of it. He's kind of paving the way for us because he has so many more people logging in. And we didn't really promote this one that much. But we will post the next one more publicly. We'll do another one of these in January, and we'll let people know. We kind of very quietly let people know about it this time so that I didn't have a Leo problem of being slammed with, you know, hundreds of people. So, but thanks, everyone, for logging in. Thank you, Merlin in Toronto. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, boys. It's nice to hear your voices.
And thanks, thank you, Scott. Thanks for dropping in. Where can people find out more? Where are you spending most of your time on, Scott?
Pretty much podcasttricks.com, and then over at the O'Reilly website on Inside Aperture, where I have a column every week.
And Merlin, you're all 43 folders.
43 folders. The latest thing, actually, I shot some stuff with Amber yesterday on That Phone Guy. So if you go to thatphoneguy.com, you can follow through to YouTube. I got three new phone guys that went up this morning.
Three new phone guys. He doesn't get any better than that.
Well, let's hope it gets better.
So does the phone guy talk about iPhone?
You know, the phone guy has not talked to... The phone guy's had a lot of health problems lately, so he's been talking about that in front of people.
John Foster, where can people find more of you?
Go to twit.tv/forum or to the specific show notes, which would be, in this case, twit.tv/MBW19.
John, is that something you're going to try and do for every show?
I'm going to try to do it for every show.
You are out of control.
I am
awesome.
I am the MCP.
Yeah, John, as the MCP, if you actually work with some of our guys, we can get it into the official notes, too.
Oh, cool.
So email Ben about that.
Right.
So that should have been in the after show, but it was in the regular show. We're not going to have much of an after show here. So anyway, this is Alex Lindsay, and another Mac break has been broken. I like that. I like that end. That end piece. I think Scott.
Mac break has been broken. That's really good.
That's pretty good.
Hey, every once in a while, the old guy has an idea worth keeping.
I'm killing this one. I was supposed to be out of my hotel room an hour ago.
Okay, guys.
Only thing I'm going to add is working on the after party for Mac World.
We have to do something.
I know, but I'm working on it.
Oh, you are?
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, let's party up.
All right. See you.
Everybody have safe travels.
All right.
See you guys.
Bye.
Bye.